This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised.
Everybody to Fruit Loops season 2 episode 16. Thank you so much for listening. Fruit Loops is a podcast about true crimes committed by people of color and their victims that we don't hear or know much about. Now, contrary to popular belief, not all serial killers are white dudes. Would you believe it? There are many well-documented cases of serial killers of color, and Fruit Loops is a podcast all about them. We will take deep dives into the fascinating lives and crimes of serial killers and true crimes committed by people of color and their victims that the media and entertainment leave out commonly because the news is racist, allegedly.
And we are Wendy and Beth. She's Wendy. I'm Beth. We're not journalists, investigators, or psychologists. Just a couple of gals interested in true crime. Mm-hmm. Also, the opinions expressed in this podcast are just that, our opinions. Please send any questions or comments to fruitloopspod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 602-935-6294, and we may feature it on a future episode. Mm. Also, our website is fruitloopspod.com, our Facebook page is Fruit Loops Pod, and our discussion group is Fruit Loops Pod Discussion on Facebook. We are also on Twitter and Instagram at Fruit Loops Pod.
That's right. And if you want to support the show, you can send us a donation on the Cash App, thank you, which you can download to your phone, or you can find online at cash.me/$FruitloopsPod, or you can become a monthly patron through our Podbean patron page. Or if you can't help monetarily, no problem. You can always give us a 5-star review on iTunes or anywhere else you get your podcast from. And be sure to share our show with your friends.
Yes.
So, Beth, who are we talking about today?
So today we are talking about Paul DeRosso, also known as the Jacksonville Strangler, an American serial killer who murdered 7 young women, including 2 who were pregnant, in the Southeast United States between 1997 and 2003.
All right, let's get into it. So, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I went to a Galentine's Day party yesterday, which was really fun.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I love how Valentine's Day has been turned into a holiday to celebrate our female friends. And I hate Valentine's Day. So I love turn things that I hate into things that I love.
You hate Valentine's Day? Come on.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it.
The sweets, the chocolates. Come on.
Well, now I love it because it's Galentine's Day. So,
okay. Well, all the more reason. Yes, Galentine's Day is worthy of much celebration. I bought a new dildo that will hang in my shower, and I am so excited for it to arrive. So happy Galentine's Day to me. Anyway, happy Galentine's Day, Beth. I'm so happy for you. So I feel so guilty because I work a lot. I have a full-time job.
Yeah, you do.
I have the podcast. I have my skincare business. And then I also sing. I moonlight as a singer, right? So I got a lot of things going on. Also, I don't like children. I do like mine though. And I love the shit out of them, but I don't do anything at their school other than like pay for stuff. There's a field trip. Okay. We'll pay for you kids. And then we'll also pay for extra kids to go. I never get my kids ready for school because I am going to work. But you know, I do pay for them to be at this school that they're going. So I feel really guilty being a working mom with many gigs, and I don't have a lot of time, but I have these two little people who need their mom. So every now and then I will take a day off of work and do some and steal one of them away from school and do something really special with them. And so this week I just surprised my son, took him out of school early, and we went to go see the Lego movie. And it was so fun. We've talked about those Lego movies in the past before on the show.
Fun.
Because they have a lot of adult jokes in them. And it was just a lot of fun. And my son didn't like take any bathroom breaks during the movie. So we got to watch the whole thing.
He
all
really
the way
liked
through.
It.
He really liked it. And it was just really fun. Really like special. So to all y'all working moms out there, this shit is hard, but I was lucky enough to be able to have the vacation time to be able to spend some time with my son, and it was glorious. So that's how I'm doing.
Right on.
Yeah, so thank you. Let's get into some listener letters. Let me find our mailbag here.
All right.
Oh, Ooh. Special delivery. So, what do you got for us, Beth?
C. Nico on Facebook said, this is a dope podcast. You have to listen to understand where I'm coming from. These ladies are fun, entertaining, and give you all the black and brown serial killer stories you never knew existed. And that was actually a review, I think, on our page. That was really super cool. Yeah.
Hip hop air horn for you. Hey. All right.
Yeah. And then Nicole on Facebook said, I love murder podcasts and this is one of my favorites. They're still pretty new. So let's show them some love, folks. And that's really cool. And she also requested an episode on the Honolulu Strangler. So we started looking into it, but it hasn't been officially solved yet. So we aren't sure if we're going to do an episode on that guy, but we're thinking about it. And I am actually hoping that they find him through DNA.
Me too. And DNA comes through every time.
Oh, yeah. But give us your thoughts, guys. Tell us what you think about doing one on a case that hasn't been solved yet.
Been solved, right. Yeah. You know where to find us. Let us know what you think.
Yep, let us know.
Because I would like to dive into it, but I don't want to dive into it if the people are not that super interested.
Not into it. And I've gotten a few messages saying that they're not interested in stories that aren't solved. And I get that too, because it's like, it's just out there hanging.
Yeah.
But some people really like the mystery. So let's hear what you have to say.
Yes. Get at us and then we will get going. So we got a message from Raw Ring Gamer. It's spelled R-A-W Ring, R-I-N-G Gamer. He said that he's been listening to our podcast and he seems to really enjoy it. Thank you. Hip hop air horns. And we just wanted to shout out his YouTube channel on behalf of him reaching out to us. So check out the Roaring Gamer on YouTube.
All right.
So now we're going to take a quick ad break and then we're going to get into the story when we get back. We would like to invite any listeners who have a business to advertise to do it with us. For more information, please email us at fruitloopspod@gmail.com or check out our website at fruitloopspod.com. All right. We're back. I'm just barely zipping up my pants from my potty break. So who are we talking about today, Beth?
Yeah, so today we're talking about Paul Durasseau, also known as the Jacksonville Strangler. As we mentioned, he murdered seven young women, two who were pregnant between 1997 and 2003. German authorities also suspect he may have killed several local women when he was stationed there with the army during the early 1990s. Typically, Durusseau would gain the victim's trust and then talk them into letting him into their house, then tie their hands, rape, and strangle them to death. All of his known victims were young, single African-American women.
Whew. All right, so now we're going to get into... You did it, Beth!
I did it!
So now we're going to now we're going to get into some stats. All right. By the way, I was talking to my mom earlier today. She's a high school teacher. And she was like, why does Cardi B do that? Why does she do that okr thing? I was like, I don't know, Mom, but it sounds cool. So
yes,
that's
why.
So we're going to do it, okay? Yeah, it's cool. So stats. Mr. Durusseau, a.k.a. the Jacksonville Strangler, was a very tall man. He stood 6'6" tall. Now, you know what they say about a tall man. Anyway, he had at least seven victims. His crimes were committed from January 6th, 1997 to January 20th, 2003. His crimes took place in the U.S., in Georgia and Florida, and possibly Germany. So he's been around. Yep. So now we're going to get into the setting. Hit it, Beth.
All right. The setting is Jacksonville, Florida. The population size is 856,000 with 322,000 households. The 2010 census noted that 30% of Jacksonville's population is Black, 50% is white, and 15% is Hispanic. The rest are Asian, mixed, or other. Most of the Hispanic population identifies as white Hispanic. Most of the Black people live in the center of the city and then fan out to the northwest part of the city.
Okay, so I'm just going to interject here. And I've talked before about the difference between Hispanic and Latinx.
Right.
Latinx is a more appropriate term to use when referring to people of Latin and or Hispanic descent. Hispanics are not... it literally means of Spain. So that your country was colonized by Spain. You know, Brazilians are not Hispanic. They are Latinx.
Right.
But I think people might assume, oh, they're Hispanic. And that's wrong. So the more appropriate term, it's a more inclusive term. It's a more, umbrella term is Latinx or Latinx, and, Hispanic, I think, should just be thrown away, but that's just me. Anyway.
we got this information from the website and I should have corrected it, but I did not.
It's all good, Beth. Yeah. Some of these, you know, well, so this happened in the late 90s, early 2000s, and all the sources that were reporting on this issue were using the language that they had at the time.
Yeah. Yep.
So, areas redlined or classified as hazardous were identified as being 75 to 100% occupied by Negroes. Also not an appropriate term. Needless despite the city's overall population increasing to 868,000 residents in 2015, the areas redlined nearly 80 years ago have lost 100,000 residents since 1950.
Wow.
Why did they leave?
Yeah.
I know, but do you? It's called white terrorism.
So, an interesting historical fact about Jacksonville, the southernmost battle of the Revolutionary War took place within Jacksonville's current boundary. The fight known today as the Battle of Thomas Creek took place 3 miles north of where Jacksonville International Airport now stands. I had no idea that there was any fighting in Florida during the Revolutionary War.
You know, I didn't either. And that's what's really neat about researching these cases is we're learning things about the United States that I had no idea
Never knew.
About.
Yeah, that's cool.
Nope. So Jacksonville is Florida's largest city. Also did not know that. The city was named after, oh boy, this is my least favorite president. After General Andrew Jackson, who later became president, who was a wild ass fucking racist, whose greatest hits include The Trail of Tears. Now, welcome to Culture Corner with Wendy and Beth. The Trail of Tears was a series of forced removal of indigenous American peoples in the United States from their ancestral homelands in the southeastern United States. White politicians called it an Indian problem, and white Americans got the shit scared out of them and believed it, and thus co-signed the removal of indigenous peoples to areas to the west, usually west of the Mississippi River, that had been designated as Indian territory. The U.S. troops ordered by the U.S. President Andrew motherfucking Jackson. Oh, that makes him sound cool. Andrew Cocksucker Jackson. There we go. Forced men, women, and children to leave their homes on foot.
Yeah, and I actually read that the Supreme Court ruled that this was illegal, and he did it anyway.
Fucking shit. Are you kidding me? I didn't know that part.
I researched a little bit about the Trail of Tears when this came up, and pretty shitty.
Oh my
God. Yeah, the forced relocation gave more than 25 million acres of fertile, lucrative farmland to the mostly white settlements of Georgia, Florida. Georgia, Florida, North Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, and Arkansas. More than 46,000 Native Americans were forced, sometimes by the U.S. military, to abandon their homes and relocate to Indian territory that eventually became the state of Oklahoma. More than 4,000 Native Americans died on the journey of disease, starvation, and exposure to extreme weather.
This, you and I had to search for this history. It was not presented to us when we were children in school, which is a damn American shame.
Yeah, yeah. And you can actually go to different places on the Trail of Tears. And I have relatives in Arkansas, and when I was visiting them, we went to some places where the Trail of Tears took place, and their monuments and stuff. Yeah.
Oh cool, that is really neat, Beth. What did you come away from the experience feeling?
Oh, it was so fucking sad. Like, just like, you can't even wrap your head around it, how it was genocide. You know?
Yeah.
It was awful.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. Well, let's get into the more sad stuff. My favorite. All right.
Buckle up.
Oh, yes. Hold on to your butts. Civil rights leader A. Philip Randolph grew up in Jacksonville. Randolph created the first African-American labor union, the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, in 1925. He also pushed President Franklin D. Roosevelt to end discrimination in hiring practices on the basis of race, color, creed, or national origin in the federal government and defense industries. Randolph was among the key organizers of the March on Washington in 1963, where Martin Luther King Jr. gave his iconic "I Have a Dream" speech.
In more recent history, when I was researching Jacksonville, I saw that just the other day, Jacksonville opened up an urban rest stop. And I was like, what the? What? What's an urban rest stop?
Ooh, that sounds so dope.
I know. So what it is, is it's a place where homeless people can hang out. And they can get everything from meals to, they can have their mail sent there. They can get medical care and showers. Yeah, the urban rest stop will give unsheltered homeless people a place to go. And I also read that they have like TVs and stuff. They can just hang out. And
oh my gosh,
it will support some 400 homeless people downtown that are either waiting for shelter beds to open up or who choose to sleep in the street. And I was actually talking to my sister about homeless people in shelters and how difficult it is if you're homeless to, one, find a shelter that will take you because they're just always overcrowded.
And always.
If you actually find a job, it's almost impossible to live in the shelter because they you have to get in line to save your place. And if you're working until five and people are in line at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you're not going to get in. And then you can't take a shower and you can't do all those things you need to do in order to keep a job. So it's just, it's really hard. Yeah. So this is, I think this is really cool.
I think this is a revolutionary idea. I think other cities should take note. If I had any power or pull in the city of Phoenix, I would tell our politicians to do something like this, because we do have a pretty, homeless people, I don't know if other people are aware of this, but they migrate to where it's warm and where the conditions are favorable for them to sleep outside. So in the wintertime, our homeless population here in Phoenix increases. In the summertime, the homeless population in, you know, like Seattle or Oregon increases because the conditions outside are more favorable. We should just have places where these people can sleep and stay, and just let's be humane. Come on,
once
guys.
You get homeless, it's really hard to get back on your feet if
to
you
get
don't,
out
you know.
Of it. Yeah, but it's really easy for us who have means to do something about it. So let's do something about it. That's all.
Yeah. Let's do it.
So thanks, Beth. Yeah, let's do it. All right. I'm going to put my cape on and I'm going to save everybody. more Jacksonville history. Jacksonville resident George Franson owns the world's largest collection of fossilized poop. Oh, God. Okay. Oh, my God. Okay. I'm going to get serious now and be like a serious podcaster, like, you know, like Phoebe Judge or Michael Barbaro. But I can't. I'm stupid, Wendy. A committed corporalite enthusiast, Franson spent 18 years gathering 1,200 prehistoric stool samples from 15 states and 8 countries. Information about the collection appears on his online museum, the Poo-zeum.
The Poo-zeum.
This is what happens when white guys have time and money and room to do their hobbies. They just really. All right.
You like how I dropped that in there for you?
I did. I love every second of it. Poo-zeum. Maybe Jacksonville as it exists today deserves hip hop air horns, and I'm going to give it to them right now. So yes, Jacksonville today, good job. But old Jacksonville definitely gets all the bags of dicks, because old Jacksonville fucking sucked. So now we're going to get into the killer's early life. So what do you got for us, Beth?
Paul D'Urso was born on August 11th, 1970 in Beaumont, Texas, to unwed parents. In 1971, when he was still just a baby, his mother moved to Los Angeles with Paul and his older brother Joseph to be raised with the help of her family. He saw his biological father just twice between the time that his father left the family and his arrest for murder.
Well, that's not good. No. According to to his brother Joseph, Paul excelled in sports and thrived on meeting young women as far back as junior high school. He just knew how to say the right things, he said. In 1989, at the age of 19, DeRusso became a security guard after graduating from Reseda High School in the Los Angeles area. His first offenses with the law as an adult took place on December 18, 1991 and January 21, 1992 for carrying concealed firearms in California.
In November of 1992, he enlisted in the U.S. Army. I read in a few articles that he enlisted in the Army rather than marrying a woman that he got pregnant, but I don't know that that's a fact. It was in some articles and not in others, so I don't know why he joined the Army, but he did, and he was stationed in Germany, where he met 21-year-old servicewoman Natoka Span.
The couple met at a German nightclub when the two soldiers were stationed in Germany. According to Natoka, we ended up talking, she said, and he talked about his family a lot. He talked about his grandmother a lot, and I liked that about him. We had just met, but he felt comfortable enough with me to get personal.
And then the two married in 1995 in Las Vegas, and in 1996, they were stationed at Fort Benning, Georgia. Neighbors and friends described DeRusso as a lewd womanizer. He allegedly often asked young women when they planned to make flicks with him.
What? Has anybody ever asked you to do that, Bev?
No, I'm assuming that means he wanted to know when they would make a porno.
Yeah, like, nope, never. I haven't been asked that either. No, okay, just wondering. Witnesses recall him trying to seduce girls as young as 13 years of age. Some who know DeRusso said he learned to manipulate girls as a youth, obsessed over pornography, and laughed at nude dead women on a favorite website. I'm wondering what that website was, but others found him charming.
I'm thinking it was Rotten.com. Do you remember that website?
No, but I have to go to it now.
There was like all kinds of pictures of dead people.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that was back in the early days of the internet.
That was like the MySpace days?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Even before MySpace.
Oh, dang. Rotten.com. Okay. Noted. But others found him charming, witty, and gentle. So now we're going to get into the timeline. So hit it, Beth.
A few days after New Year's Eve in 1997, a woman was kidnapped and raped in Columbus, Georgia. DeRusso was arrested on March 13th, 1997, and charged with the crime. But just 5 months later, he was acquitted of the charges. I don't know the details on that, so I don't know why. But anyway.
Yeah, me either. But if anybody out there listening does, get at us. You know where to find us.
Yeah.
less than 1 month after DeRusso was acquitted on September 7th, 1997. Oh my gosh, seventh grade. At least that's where I was in my life, 1997.
I had just gotten divorced a couple years prior.
Oh,
I went back to college. Yeah, so I was in college.
What a year. It was a very good year.
Not for this lady though. Oh man.
No, not for me either. Okay. I mean, it was one of we don't have to.
Yeah, let's go back. Yeah.
let's get into the story. Okay. We can talk about how terrible the 90s were for us. What would we have done without Janine Garofalo and Bjork?
Oh yeah. I actually really liked the 90s, so oh well.
I liked the 90s music and the content, but I really hated my life in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. You were a teenager.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's always
the
rough.
I was 12 and the most awkward individual in
I was
nobody,
pretty awkward
nobody
too.
Is I don't know. Is anybody cool at 12? Like, I was just such a weird person.
Oh my God. My hair was so gross too.
So I had braids, but I was like, I want to be just like all the cool white girls. So I'm going to get some blonde streaks in my braids. So I had blonde streak braids. I wore Vans, of course. And I wore a hooded sweatshirt everywhere and polyester pants. I mean, and weird t-shirts that said random things like, I like jizz, or
oh god,
dinosaurs are cool. Like, it's just, I just wore weird.
Okay, so so when I was 12, probably more like 13, you know, I wanted my hair cut like Dorothy Hamill, you know, the ice skater.
Can I Google her right now?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Okay. So she had really short feathered hair, and that was like really popular at the time in the 70s, and so I got my hair cut like Dorothy Hamill, but I had no idea how to style it, and my mom was my mom was not into like makeup and hairstyling or anything like that, so I had no fucking clue, and there was no YouTube to show me how to do it, so my hair was just like short and ugly, and I was fat. And I loved Steve Martin.
Oh, the comedian. Okay.
So I would wear shirts that would say, "One wild and crazy gal." out of balloons.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Yeah, so I was pretty fucking nerdy.
Oh my god. You know what? You know, somebody needs to be, there needs to be a person like in school or in like the world who can save 12-year-olds from themselves.
Scoop us up, yes, and say, like, "Oh, hey. Not cool." Or even better, say, "You know what? That is totally cool. Everybody else should be doing that."
Everybody pees their pants, just like in that stupid Adam Sandler movie. You're not cool unless you pee your pants.
Moving off on a tangent.
We sure did. Okay, bingo.
Okay, let's start over again.
So here we go. Back to the 90s. Less than 1 month after DeRusso was acquitted on September 7th, 1997, the nude body of Tracy Habersham was found by someone walking a dog near the neighborhood where the 26-year-old grew up.
Tracy had been missing for 48 hours and was last seen 2 days earlier at a party at a Fort Benning nightclub. She had been raped and strangled to death with a cord, and police believed that she had been killed shortly after leaving the party. DeRusso was not a suspect in that murder at the time.
The following week, DeRusso's wife, Nautica, gave birth to a daughter. 2 months later, due to continued domestic violence, she took her daughter and returned to her hometown of Jacksonville, Florida. DeRusso then followed them to Florida.
In January 1999, DeRusso accepted a dishonorable discharge rather than face a court-martial for being in possession of computer equipment stolen from the Army base.
No big deal. On April 1999, DeRusso was arrested for molesting a 15-year-old girl in Jacksonville, but charges were not filed. The next month, he was arrested in Jacksonville for trespassing and spent 2 days in jail.
And then in July 1999, DeRusso raped and killed 24-year-old Teresa Mack in her apartment. Teresa was a single mother of 3 kids. Mm. She was outgoing and devoted to her children. The last time anyone heard from Mac was around 1:25 p.m. that afternoon when Mac spoke with a friend on the phone. Mac did not pick her children up from daycare that day, and she missed a 3 p.m. doctor's appointment for her youngest child, and this was all very unusual because, as we said, she was devoted to her children.
She was devoted to her children. Her youngest child had asthma, I believe, and I think that she, the appointment was
That's
for
why
her.
She was going to the doctors. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think at the time she was not wandering, but going about town looking for places to apply for jobs.
Because she was having a hard time finding a job because she kept having to miss work because of her child with
asthma.
Yeah,
doctor appointment. Yeah, which is another unfortunate thing about being having children with special needs, being poor.
And corporate America.
Uh-huh. And corporate America. Mm-hmm. So if this was a white dude, we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
No.
So family members tried to reach Tyresa by phone, but were unable to. And around 7 p.m. that same evening, Mac's sister went to Mac's apartment to check on her. There, she discovered Mac's body lying in a semi-fetal position on the bed. Her body was nude from the waist down, and a white cord was wrapped around her neck. The living room television and a necklace and bracelet set that Mac always wore were missing. She was bound, raped, and strangled with an electrical cord. The medical examiner concluded that Mac died from asphyxia, and DNA evidence was found at the scene.
Eyewitnesses saw a tall black man at Mac's Jacksonville apartment sometime between noon and 2 p.m. One of the eyewitnesses saw this man carrying a television out of the apartment and watched as he placed it in his car. Eyewitnesses were shown mugshots but were unable to identify him. Some acquaintances were interviewed as possible suspects, but were cleared. However, as the DNA was recovered from the crime scene, they did have that, but the murder went unsolved for 4 years.
4 years, fools!
Yep, 4 years.
DeRusso struggled to keep jobs and make ends meet, and he and Nataka would... Did I say that right? Nataka.
I don't know.
I think so. I'm trying.
It's spelled N-A-T-O-C-A, yes. So we're not really sure how it's pronounced, but Nataka or Natoka, I'm not sure.
Natoka. Okay. Would have, they would often fight about money, he and his wife. A few weeks after Teresa Mack's murder, Nataka DeRusso asked police how to get a domestic violence restraining order after DeRusso became violently angry when Nataka talked about getting a divorce. He allegedly slapped her in the face and grabbed her by the neck. However, she did not follow up with the police on that initial complaint.
But 19 months after she first inquired about a restraining order, Nataka did seek one after being assaulted by DeRusso again. Mm. But the injunction was never granted because the couple came to an agreement to drop the petition, which this is all pretty typical of domestic violence couples that...
I'm not surprised. Yeah. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
We've talked about domestic violence issues in the past, and we might need to link up some sources when we post our episode and do the footnotes. But I think on average, it takes a woman 7 times to try to leave.
I was thinking 10 times.
Somewhere
around there. Yeah.
It's seven to 10 times
around there. We're just pulling this from our brains. So
I'm just trying to remember what I've seen on Oprah. Okay. A lot of times to try to leave, to get to safety, even when you have kids, even when the abuse is so terrible, it's not easy to leave a domestic violence situation. And so we should not shame these women. We should not shame anybody that we know in our lives who is undergoing these current conditions or involved in this situation. It's really hard.
It's really hard. Yeah.
So there. 3 months later, June 24th, 2001, a 19-year-old Jacksonville woman was raped in her home. She and DeRusso were dating, and when she broke up with him, he assaulted and raped her. DeRusso was arrested and spent 30 days in jail. In a plea deal, the charges were reduced to simple assault. He received 2 years probation, DNA had been taken, but the plea bargain also kept his DNA out of the police database. What the fuck? He went to court, ordered counseling, but missed 9 of 15 appointments. Okay.
So yeah, pretty much was was not doing that.
Yeah. Not one bit.
Not doing that. No. So Durso did manage to hold down a few legitimate jobs. In 2001, he was hired as a school bus driver and an animal control worker, and also as an auto mechanic, despite being a convicted felon. But on August 31st, 2001, Durso was arrested for domestic battery. He spent 48 days in jail until his wife dropped the charges and he was released.
8 months later, he was arrested for burglary and spent 5 months in jail awaiting trial. On October 4th, 2002, Durso was acquitted of the burglary charge by jury verdict. Oh, wow. But the judge extended Durso's probation by 2 years. Then, on December 19, 2002, 18-year-old Nicole L. Williams' body was found wrapped in a blue blanket at the bottom of a ditch in Jacksonville. She had been reported missing 2 days earlier.
And on the evening of New Year's Day, January 1, 2003, family members of 19-year-old Nakia Kilpatrick went to check on her. They had not had any news from her for several days. Her body was found in her bedroom of the apartment. She had been raped, then strangled with a coaxial cable as many as 2 days prior. Her two sons, an 11-month-old and a 2-year-old, were alive but malnourished. Kilpatrick was approximately 6 months pregnant at the time of her death. DNA evidence was recovered.
It takes a special sick fuck to kill a woman who is with child, if you ask me.
Yeah, and then with 2 children in her house, too.
Yes, yes. What the fuck,
and
man?
To just leave her there. And and they were there for, what, two days?
Yes.
And they could have died.
Yes. It just blows my fucking mind. So 10 days later, and just a mile away, 20-year-old nursing student Shonda Denise McAllister, who was also pregnant at the time of her death, was raped and strangled in her Jacksonville apartment. The murder scene was almost identical to that of Kilpatrick. She was found by her boyfriend, bound and naked, and had a unique slipknot with an electrical cord tied around her neck. The slipknot was identical to how the cable on Nakia Kilpatrick's neck had been tied. DNA was found at this crime scene as well, and it was later matched to the DNA found at the crime scene at Nakia Kilpatrick's murder.
Durso had begun working for the Gator City Taxi Company, and Shawanda was killed on his first day of driving a cab for them. Her body was found the following day. It has been erroneously reported in various news articles that Gator City Taxi Company failed to run a background check on Durso, and this is how he first came into contact with some of his victims. But the City of Jacksonville Department of Motor Vehicle Taxicab Inspection Office is responsible for background investigations of people applying for taxicab driver permits. And Durso was issued a taxicab driver permit from the City of Jacksonville. So they're the ones who failed to do the background check, apparently.
Apparently. And I don't, I was going to say, I mean, I take Lyfts very frequently. I don't take regular city cabs because they're trash. And I just think that they're all scammers, and I think all taxi cabs are trash, and I don't have anything good to say about these taxi cab companies. They're really
all I got to say about it is every time I've tried to use a taxi, it's always been a big fat pain in the ass. I've had to wait around for forever.
Yeah,
the taxi cab drivers are weird. And
what are they thinking? And you guys can't compete with the new age. Like, so
no.
Taxi cabs, I think, just need to go. Just get out.
Or just get on, you know, the same kind of format. where you call a taxi with an app.
Where we can background check.
And you see the picture of the person and they track you and all that stuff.
And we can send our trip.
Yep. Get on it.
Well, guess who runs taxi cabs?
Who?
Old white dudes.
Oh, yeah.
So just saying that I have an old white dude in my house who doesn't love change. It is hard for him to try new things. And so change is great, you guys. I am telling you, but I think old guys are scared. They're scared of change.
Life changes all the time. It changes all the time. And you just have to embrace it.
Yes.
You just have to embrace it.
Absolutely.
Because it's going to change whether you like it or not. So
that's right.
You might as well embrace it and see what's good about the change and, you know, try to find the good spots. I don't know.
You know what? I think, Beth, that statement deserves a hip-hop air horn. And if I need my fucking phone to cooperate right now, there we go!
Something else that drives me nuts is like when people complain about millennials and how worthless they are. And
oh my God!
You know what?
Yeah. So I'm an elderly millennial and I get offended every fucking time.
Yeah. I'm offended just because it's not true. You know, things are changing. Our lives are changing. So they're behaving differently than the way that we behaved when we were younger. Big deal. We behave differently from the way the generation before us behaved.
Yes.
And they complained about us.
I know.
So
they complained about
us. Not.
Yes! You're not a baby boomer. Are you a baby boomer?
I'm right on the cusp. I'm Generation X.
Okay.
But right on the cusp.
Okay.
But
okay,
they
okay.
always complained about Generation X being slackers and blah, 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 whatever.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
it's all bullshit.
They always complain.
The kids
yes.
are okay. The kids are okay.
Yes. Everybody's okay. Everybody is just trying to survive, you fucking cocksuckers.
So anyway,
it drives me crazy. Anyway, Shawanda had withdrawn money from an ATM, and review of the video showed a taxi cab in the background with its lights on. They could not see the company. The neighbors said that they saw a Gator City cab parked in front of Shawanda's apartment building between 9 to 11 p.m. Investigators began investigating taxi cab drivers at Gator City Taxi.
On February 5th, 2003, the bodies of 17-year-old Giovanna Jefferson and 19-year-old Sarita Cohen were found close to each other in a ditch next to a construction site on New Kings Road in Jacksonville. Police estimated that Jefferson was murdered around January 20th, and Cohen was killed 10 days later. Witnesses recounting having seen the two last victims with a taxi driver, fitting Paul Durso's description on the night that they each disappeared.
Giovanna Jefferson was reported missing after she failed to return from a trip to the store. On the morning of her disappearance, she received a phone call from the man she referred to as D. She left the house to meet D, and that's the last time she was seen alive. Police combed through Giovanna's phone records and quickly learned that D was probably Paul Durso. The clue was an important lead. However, according to Jacksonville Sheriff Nat Glover, there was not enough evidence yet available to charge him.
Sarita Cohen was found with her hands bound behind her back with a telephone cord. There was bruising on Giovanna Jefferson's wrists, which the medical examiner said was consistent with being bound before death. Jacksonville police realized they had a serial killer on the loose, and Paul Durso was their prime suspect.
So now we are going to get into the investigation and arrest. So I will take it from here. On February 6th, 2003, the day after the two last victims' bodies were found, DeRusso was arrested on unrelated charges. Violation of probation because he was not attending court-ordered counseling sessions. Police wanted him off the streets since he was the prime suspect in the murders, but they didn't have the hard evidence lined up yet.
Yeah, so that's, I want to say that's pretty cool, but it's not really cool, but it's good. It's good that they knew that it was him, but they didn't have the evidence yet, so they got him on something else so that they could lock him up.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's yeah. What's that Kevin Spacey movie where they got Capone? It's Capone-ish. No?
Yeah, they caponed him.
Yeah.
Investigation showed that DNA evidence, fiber analysis, cab records, and cell phone calls all linked DeRusso to the murders. Also, according to Sheriff Nat Glover, the killer used a peculiar slipknot on the ligature he used to strangle some of the victims. Authorities used the months that DeRusso was jailed to piece together the evidence with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement.
A search of DeRusso's previous residence turned up a bad sheet that contained DNA from Jefferson, and a search of his car turned up jewelry belonging to Cohen and Jefferson, and the pair's cell phone records showed that they had placed calls to him. Police went back to the June 24th, 2001 rape charge that had been reduced to simple assault, got the DNA collected in that case, and matched it to the DNA found at the various crime scenes. Yay!
So they knew it was Paul. Yes. DeRusso.
Yes. Yep. We found him. We got you, bitch.
Yep. They got him. On June 23rd, 2003, DeRusso was indicted on 5 counts of first-degree murder for the murders of Nicole Williams, Nakia Kilpatrick, Shawanda McAllister, Giovanna Jefferson, and Sarita Cohen. The similar methodology employed by the perpetrator, as well as DNA evidence from each crime scene, caused investigators to conclude that Mac was one of DeRusso's victims.
On August 26, 2003, DeRusso was arrested for the murder of Teresa Mack while he was still at the Duval County Jail. Duval! You know who the little, do you know who little Duval is? Oh, he's a comedian, but he released a track that is super fun. It's called Living My Best Life. It's Little Duval. Okay. Anyway.
Don't know that one.
You
sorry.
Don't know that one. All right.
Too old.
All right. I'm living my best life. So while in the booking area, Detective Rodney McKean informed DeRusso that he was being formally charged with the murder of Teresa Mack. DeRusso stated, "I don't know no Mack." When the police informed him that Mack had been murdered in Florida Avenue, DeRusso responded, "I don't know that girl." Police described his behavior at the time as aloof and arrogant.
Most of DeRusso's neighbors in the far north Jacksonville neighborhood that he lived in described him as a quiet person who kept to himself. But Marie Thompson, 25, who lived 2 doors down, said she had known him for years and found him to be unsavory. He was just nasty. He did things to young girls he shouldn't do, she said. I like that. Mm. He's just nasty.
Mm, nasty. Nasty. It's a nasty award. DeRusso was charged with murder in the deaths of 5 young women killed in Jacksonville between December 2002 and February 2003, but was only prosecuted in the Teresa Mack case. The prosecutor didn't think that they had enough hard evidence in those cases and that the DNA only showed that he had sex with the victims. Trash.
Mm-hmm. If you ask me, they had like a shit ton of evidence.
They're fucking trash. Anyway, yeah. DNA Renee was also matched in Tyrese Mack's murder, and police theorized that DeRusso probably charmed his way into their house, then later attacked her. They believed that this was, in fact, his MO for most of the crime.
The eyewitnesses, who, if you recall, saw a tall black man with Tyrese's television, were able to identify DeRusso in photo lineups. The prosecutor felt that this was the strongest case, I guess because the eyewitnesses, I don't know, it seemed like they had a lot of circumstantial evidence for the other ones. But anyway, it was the only one that DeRusso was prosecuted for. But the other murders were allowed to be presented as evidence in the trial, which is interesting. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Fucking
DNA would also later tie him to Tracy Habersham's murder in Georgia, and German authorities, as we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, suspect DeRusso may have killed several local women when he was stationed there in the army during the early 1990s.
Fucking A, man.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I would love to be a man in any society. You just get away with it. It's great. Sling my dick around and fuck all these bitches and just get away with all kinds of crimes. Woo! All right. In July 2004, Judge John Skinner ordered a psychological evaluation for DeRusso. According to his examination of DeRusso's early life, they found almost none of the indicators that normally suggest future antisocial behavior. You guys are fucking idiots. He allegedly experienced no abuse growing up. There were no known traumatic events in his life. Fuck you. And he graduated from his high school without incident. Okay.
So, yeah, I would say having an absent father could be considered traumatic. And in a psychological examination, they're relying on self-reporting. And he may have chosen not to report any abuse. But it's possible that there wasn't any.
So. Yeah, you're right. It's possible.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who are considered psychopaths start their criminal behavior when they're really young. And this guy really didn't until he was in his 20s. So it's kind of weird. But from everything I've read, psychopathic behavior can be the result of nature, nurture, or both.
Yeah. But another thing that I didn't notice until now is he was in prison. He had been jailed.
Yeah, that's true.
Some really fucked up stuff happens to men, young boys, when they are in prison in these confined spaces.
And that's why the documentary Making a Murderer is called Making a Murderer.
Yeah.
Because they allege that, you know, the guy who was jailed, he didn't do the crime. Mm-hmm. He was imprisoned. Mm-hmm. And then they found out he was innocent, let him go. And then we don't know if he committed this crime, the second crime, or not. But if he did, it's probably because he was jailed.
Yep. Yeah. So, because of the terrible environment. And I don't know what I know that prisons make a lot of money for a lot of people, but you fucking assholes need to reevaluate your business model, because this is really just tearing people up. This is just killing people. Stop. I think a lot of
people think of prison as a punishment, and really yeah, it's sort of a punishment. You know, you take people out of society, but it should not be a punishment to the point where you're actually making people worse. You know, it should 100%. Be more about rehabilitation.
You are absolutely right.
Should be all about rehabilitation. Mm-hmm, but you know what? We are spending so many tax dollars on just housing these people when mm-hmm. we really should be spending mm-hmm. it on making these people productive members of society instead of creating more criminals and worse criminals.
All right, you know what, Beth? You're getting a hip hop because you are one of the white ladies. You are one of the white ladies who gets it. I just love that you get it. That no, this you can't just.
It's just common sense. It's you know, to me, it just seems sense. Like common sense. God damn it, motherfuckers.
Oh my fucking God. Oh my God. You are right. No, we can't just. It's not helping. It's not helping.
No, it's not. It's making everything worse.
Tell me who it's helping. Tell me who it's helping.
Yeah.
If it's not helping, then we need to do something different. And
we need to do something different.
You.
Yeah. And,
oh my God.
And old white guys are resistant to change. So
yes, they are. Ugh, oh my God.
So
I have,
hard.
I have
so hard
one
to
in my house
everything.
Who wants to speak to all the managers. Come on. He loves talking to the managers. He can't help himself. All right. Where are we? Okay. Got it. All of DeRusso's victims were Black women aged 18 to 20 years old who were attacked in their own homes, tied up, raped, then strangled with electric cord. His motivation was classified as disorganized lust.
Although witnesses placed DeRusso near Mac's apartment on the day of her death, the defense argued that the investigation was sloppy and that the evidence had been fabricated. But on June 8th, 2007, the jury found DeRusso guilty of first-degree murder. According to eyewitness accounts, DeRusso, 36, showed no emotion when the verdict was announced.
During the penalty phase, the state alleged the existence of four aggravators. One, DeRusso was previously convicted of a felony involving the use of the use or threat of violence. Two, the murder was committed while the defendant was engaged in the commission of a robbery or sexual battery. And three, the murder was committed for, I'm sorry,
pecuniary.
Okay. You're going to need to give me a definition of that one. Pecuniary gain. And four, murder was especially heinous, atrocious, and cruel. I'm sorry. Pecuniary gain. What does that mean, Beth?
Monetary, I think.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm done.
I believe.
I don't need any more information.
DeRusso asserted the existence of the following statutory mitigating circumstances. Get this. One, his capacity to appreciate the criminality of his conduct or to conform his conduct to the requirement of the law was substantially impaired at the time he committed the murder. How? And two, he suffered from an extreme mental and emotional disturbance at the time of the murder.
You don't say.
He presented two mental health experts and 17 lay witnesses. DeRusso also presented evidence of 17 non-statutory mitigators. But the jury recommended the death penalty by a vote of 10-2.
If I had a dick, I'd ask DeRusso to suck it because he is a piece of
that
shit.
Is bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is total bullshit.
Ooh,
yeah.
All right, DeRusso. Get out of here. Hey. So, now we're going to get into, oh, where are they now? Well, I'll tell you. On December 13th, 2007, DeRusso was sentenced to death by lethal injection for the murder of Tyresa Mack. In January 2017, DeRusso's death sentence was overturned by the Florida Supreme Court. The decision cited a January 2016 U.S. Supreme Court ruling in a case known as Hearst v. Florida, saying, DeRusso's death sentence was imposed under an unconstitutional capital sentencing statute. In other words, it's fuck shit. Anyway, because the trial jury split on the death sentence, it was 10-2. The state Supreme Court threw out the death sentence since the jury was not unanimous.
DeRusso is currently housed at the Maximum Security Unit at Union Correctional Institute in the Florida Department of Corrections. According to their website, he has a detainer from Columbus, Georgia, PD, dated 5/23/18. From what I understand, I did a little research, it's a warrant for pending charges in another jurisdiction and likely for the murder of Tracy Habersham in Georgia. So if he's ever released, he would be sent to Georgia to face those charges.
Oh,
so that's good.
That is good. That's it. So he won't escape justice. That's good.
No. He's spending the rest of his life in jail.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, let's get into what we think made him snap. Tell me what you got, Beth. I'm dying to know. OG of two.
Well, I'm not sure. As we mentioned earlier, they found almost none of the indicators that normally suggest future antisocial behavior. Okay. He allegedly experienced no abuse growing up. There was no known traumatic events in his family life that we know of, aside from having an absent father.
Okay.
It's possible that there was some abuse that was not disclosed, but we don't know. He was definitely abusive towards his wife, and obviously he had some anger, which he directed towards women. Mm-hmm. Some studies have shown similarities between the mental impairments observed in psychopaths and those seen in patients with frontal lobe damage. And we've talked about head injuries in other episodes, but we don't know if he ever had a head injury. Other studies have shown that there is a gene which is linked with an increased risk of violent or aggressive behavior known as the MAOA gene. I'm going to try to pronounce this.
Okay.
Monoamine oxidase A. This gene, sometimes called the warrior gene, controls the production of a protein that breaks down brain signaling chemicals like dopamine, noradrenaline, and serotonin, which all influence mood. But we don't know if he has this gene. And even if he does, further studies have shown that people who have it normally only show psychopathic behavior when they also have traumatic childhoods. So in short, we just don't have enough information. But I think that you were on to something when you were talking about him being jailed. And, you know, there could have been some abuse in there.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, we all know growing up Black in America is traumatic in itself. But I think that him being in the system was also enough to credit his violent tendencies. I don't know if anybody listening has seen the what is that? The young man who got jailed for stealing a backpack, which he didn't steal, but he was in jail for 3 years because he never got a trial.
Oh my God.
Which
happens all the fucking time.
It happens a lot.
Especially to people of color.
especially to people of color. And this individual, young boy, was put in solitary confinement for years.
And that drives people crazy.
It really does. It literally makes you lose your mind. And so I can only imagine Mr. Dussault being in jail and what it could have done to him psychologically and what that led to him when he left the prison gates. And so I think that is something to be considered as part of his story. I can say so many.
Yeah, I think you're onto something.
I can say so many things. He may have never been abused as a child, but he went into jail, and that could have been what fucked him up. And
who knows what happened in there?
So we will really never know. But that's what I think might have contributed to his snapping. So now we're going to get into his what's next takeaways.
We're going to get into our takeaways.
Oh, our takeaways. That's right. So I got a lot of information from the true crime documentary on ID that I found on YouTube about this killer. The detectives were very diverse, which was really cool because it was in Florida. So there was a lot of brown and black people on the police force. And that was really cool. And they noticed quicker than other trash ass police departments that there was a connection given the similar scenes and similar victims. Also, this man worked in the neighborhood where he killed his victims. People recognized him and saw him. And I'm pissed that he victimized his own community in the way that he did and left a really lasting impact given the surviving family members. It's evil.
So in this case, like in the case about the Taco Bell strangler, if you listen to that one, it seemed like his early life was okay, and he did well in school and did not get into trouble until later, like I said, in his 20s. Then when he did get into trouble, it seems like he was given a pass, and he had opportunities to correct himself, but he did not, and instead went on to do some pretty heinous stuff. One of the investigators on the ID show that Wendy mentioned made a statement about how when people like this are not given consequences for their actions, they start thinking that they can do whatever they want. I have known people like that. And I think empathy makes us want to give people second chances. And if the person is charming, they often get third, fourth, and fifth chances. But, you know, as the great Maya Angelou says, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time.
I'm gonna have to get the applause sound effect. Okay. Yes. 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 Yes.
But I wrote that before I considered the jailing. So I don't know.
I will never know. It's just fun to talk about this
stuff. Still, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time.
So now we're going to get into how not to get murdered. All right. So if you love true crime and you don't want to die, here's a tip for you.
The segment is not intended to be victim blaming. We thought of this segment because I read somewhere that a lot of people listen to true crime because they want to know what they can do to be safer. But in my mind, this is not meant to blame the victims. It's just learning from other people's mistakes. Sometimes we have no suggestions for a particular episode, and then we'll just offer up generic tips.
So I got nothing. Beth, I can't wait to hear what you have for us.
So I found something online, a list of safety tips for women written by a female cop. A lot of them we've already touched on in other episodes, and it's long, so I won't read the whole thing, but we'll put it in our footnotes so you can go and look at it. However, one tip seemed to correspond with the story in this episode in a list of what she called the most common mistakes women can make that could result in getting kidnapped, attacked, or raped.
Oh.
She said, one of the mistakes is trusting a clean-cut, honest-looking stranger. I see mugshots of every sex offender in the state of Florida. They do not look like monsters. They often look like they could be your friendly grocer. They are every age between 15 and 90 and probably beyond.
Oh, no.
Only a small minority actually looks scary. I just read a case yesterday of a man with one leg who beat up his victim with his crutch before he raped her.
Santa Maria!
Who would have ever thought that a one-legged man would be a rapist?
Oh, no.
So pretty much don't trust anybody.
Don't trust any fucking body. Oh, no.
And Paul Durso, from what I've read, he would make friends with the victims, and then he would talk his way into their house.
Yeah.
And then he would attack them. So,
yeah,
you just got to be careful. Even
really?
like this lady, the cop says, they look normal. So they don't have something on their foreheads that says monster, you know, they just look like normal people. Trust your gut. Don't trust anybody until you've known them for a long time. That's all.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Good tip. Thank you so much. So now we are going to get into some serial killer and true crime news. Basically, anything not created or curated by a straight, white, cisgender dude. So what do you got for
all
us?
All right. This is actually from Sasha on our Facebook discussion group.
Oh, hi.
She posted an article, which is an update on Samuel Little, who is, if you remember, the old black dude who confessed to being a serial killer.
Yeah.
Apparently, he drew some pictures of many of his victims from memory.
Oh, God.
And the FBI is asking for help in identifying them. The FBI has said that the images have proven quite accurate. I don't know exactly what that means, but I'm guessing that they have already identified some of the victims.
Hopefully.
They have released, they have released 16 pictures to the public, and the way that it's worded makes me think that there are more. He's confessed to over 90 murders.
Yeah.
And they have been able to corroborate the facts on somewhere around 30 of them. And this guy must have one heck of a memory. I'm
oh, yes.
What.
Well, no, it's not typical. Like in cases that I've understood is that serial killers, they remember very vividly these
their crimes,
yeah. and they remember so many details that of course he can draw pictures of them.
Yeah. Well, there's so many of them though. Like, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
So anyway, the FBI said, we want to give these women their names back and their families some long-awaited answers. It's the least we can do.
Yeah.
So you can visit the FBI's website to see more information about each of Little's portraits, including when and where each alleged victim may have been killed. The Bureau has urged anyone with information about the victims to contact their violent criminal apprehension program at 1-800-634-4097. And we'll add all this to our footnotes.
We will. And thank you so much, Beth. Let's identify these women so they and their families can get the long-awaited justice justice that they deserve. We'd also like to acknowledge that there is a need for us to do an episode on Samuel Little, but we want to do a really good job on it. And the killers, we want to do an adequate story on the killer, and we want to do justice victims. To the victims. Yeah. And there's still so many missing pieces to this story that we at Fruit Loops, we don't think that we can do it justice yet. So we rest assured we will do a show on this killer someday, but I don't think we're ready to do it yet. So sit tight, Fruit Loop Pod Squad. We see you, boo. We will do it someday. So hip hop air horns.
Yes.
Fruit Loop Pod Squad, we hear you. We will do it someday, just not yet. Okay?
Yeah.
So now we are going to get into the show where we do our shout outs to any content by people of color, about people of color, or any marginalized groups, LGBTQ groups, any true crime goodies. So I wanted to shout out two dope queens. They don't really need a shout out by us because they are already super awesome. Have you heard of them, Beth?
I have, yeah.
Oh, okay. So they're already super awesome, super popping right now. But before they do, they're doing their HBO special. I wanted to just shout them out. I used to listen to their podcast, and HBO heard their podcast and was like, let's give them a show. So maybe they'll do that to us.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, hey. So, you never know.
Yeah. <Woo-hoo-hoo>. So HBO heard how awesome their podcast was and decided to give them a show. And I'm just really, really proud of them. It's a really, really funny group of guys. It's two black comedian females. It's Phoebe Robinson and Jessica Williams, who was on the she was on the Daily Show, and they do a little banter. They do some improv with each other. They have interesting guests. They bring on only LGBTQ comedians and POC comedians, and they let them each do a set. There are no new podcast episodes, unfortunately, but they have a new season of their HBO show that's coming out now, which is really exciting. So follow them on Instagram, go back and listen to their old episodes because they are really funny. No matter, even though it's not like it's not current, it is still super funny. And support these two dope queens. They are hilarious. So support black women and listen to black women. These two
awesome.
Oh my God. Have you seen Abducted in Plain Sight on Netflix? Did you watch it?
I haven't seen it, but I've heard about it.
Oh my fucking God. Okay, I'm sorry, but these white people in Utah are fucking nuts. Sorry to our fans in Utah, but these people are fucking ridiculous. I still don't know what to think about this fucking family. Oh my God. Okay. The dad jacked off the dude who was his neighbor. Dude fucked the mom. Okay. Then the dude had sex with the daughter and kidnapped her two times. Two times, fool? Mm-hmm. Are you fucking kidding me? And they waited 5 days to call the police because they didn't want to stir shit up. Are you?
They didn't want to bother anybody, you know?
They didn't want to bother anybody. I can't even. I'm looking around like, what the fuck is wrong with these people? Am I crazy? This is crazy.
No.
This is crazy.
No, you're not
what
crazy.
What the actual fuck is happening?
They're crazy.
Okay. Oh, lastly, I have one more shout out, and this is to an artist because I want to support Black art. It is Rod Benson. art.com. He's a former NBA athlete, very talented artist. Follow his shit on the internet. Follow him on Instagram. It's at Z, letter Z, S-O-R-R-Y-O-N. That's Z Sarion at rodbensonart.com. And he is really cool. He's an NBA basketball player. Retired, but he has really, really cool neon art, and I just think it's
we'll have to check that out.
Yeah, we should support. I mean,
so it's neon, so that's Z-Sarion neon. Yeah. All right,
Sarion. Gotcha. I think Sarion is his middle name. So Rod.
Oh, okay.
Sarion Benson.
I thought it was some kind of play on neon.
Ew, that. Well, look, that's the artist in you.
Can it could be.
Creative ass stuff. but anyway, so I'm sorry. I gave 3 shout outs and I feel really bad because
that's all right. That's all right. Well, I'll save shout outs for next week. I really didn't have any anyway. So,
okay.
All right. That's all right.
Okay. All right. So where can the people find us, Beth?
Our website is fruitloopspod.com. Our Facebook page is Fruit Loops Pod. And our discussion group is Fruit Loops Pod Discussion on Facebook. We are also on Twitter and Instagram at Fruit Loops Pod. And links to our sources will be in our footnotes. If you want to support the show, you can send us a donation on the Cash App, which you can download to your phone. Or you can find online at cash.me/$FruitLoopsPod, or you can become a monthly patron through our Podbean patron page. This will help pay for things like our website and pod hosting. There's no minimum and no commitment. Even a dollar would help.
That's right. Now, this is a weekly podcast and new episodes drop every Thursday. So, until next time, look alive, guys. It's crazy out there.